This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can... Ugh.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied. It's fine.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course.
Bismarck.
No, was it? Bismarck was on it?
Liz Mark.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck, yeah. He dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big buzz play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
The scene was rocky, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the match.
They played the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the match.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening. The nip is in the air. Scott Criscola, fall is definitely here. Although it was like 75 today, so I don't know. Who knows? How you doing?
It is very strange. Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 384 of The Mothership. It has been a strange week. Like, there's a nip, and then it's 74. And then it's at night, it's like 50. It's like the strange month.
It's challenging, you know, for someone with a 3-year-old that's already pain in the ass about what to wear. So
yes.
Manic.
Oh, God.
Major earth-shattering news today in the world of wrestling, Scott.
Earth-shattering. Like, apocalyptic.
Oh, that's where we're led to believe for about 20 minutes, and then it just turned out to be Sami Zayn signing some autographs for Evolve. But for a while there, it seemed like it may be... monstrous.
Stop the postseason. We don't need baseball. This is it right here.
Speaking of baseball, mm-hmm. How you doing? I was all pumped about the Blue Jays choking and shoving it in all your... Although I still feel confident shoving it in the Evolution staff's faces, because you guys made it like they might even make 3 games. They might just say call it after 2 or something like that. The way that
Jays
destroy everyone.
Yeah. No, we did think that. And I'm torn, though. As an analyst on Sports Evolution... I'd like to think eventually we'll be right if they win Wednesday up at Sky Dome, or Rogers Center. But my fandom, I absolutely cannot stand Josh Donaldson, so I was hoping they'd sweep him, but Texas just doesn't have the pitching.
Well, and saw that today. So. Right the ship Wednesday. Your yes. Mets playing tonight.
Yes.
1-1.
Yep. The Dark Knight against Glenn, let's say Glenn Anderson.
Glenn Buller. Used to play
for the Rangers. Glenn Buller. Brett Anderson.
Oh, okay.
Big game. This is the game that this kid's wanted. You know, with all the stuff that surrounded him in the short career he's had, this is what he wanted. He wanted the spotlight. He wanted the game that needed to be won. So just go out and win it. Pretty
so how
simple.
Why don't you take a minute to share your thoughts on Chase Utley for us?
I believe him that he didn't want to intentionally hurt Ruben Tejada, because no one's that
son of a bitch.
No one's that sadistic. But but was he? Should he have been called out? Yes. Should Howie Kendrick have been called out? Yes. And there should never.
No,
have
hang
been
on. Why should he been called out?
Because he slid out of the baseline.
Okay. Not because he slid out of the base or anything.
No. He slid out of the baseline.
Go ahead. It's been a while.
He slid out of the baseline. And, you know, first off, and you look at the replay, and Tejada's toe did kind of clip the base.
Nah, come on.
But regardless, didn't matter anyway. But they don't have Dom Mattingly doesn't have the guts to start him tonight. Because apparently Gutley's got a 333 average against Mahavi. Instead, he's going to start Jimmy Rollins so we can all get in our Phillies heads of 2007, like Mattingly's trying to play this psychological card. But
what do you think about Donnie sitting there and saying that if this was David Wright, no one would say anything?
No, because David Wright wouldn't do that. Okay, it's a terrible example.
It was a bad straw man by Donnie.
Let's say if Reggie Jackson in the 78 series stuck his ass out on that throw and bounced it down the left field line and nobody thought, oh, it was a great baseball play when Tommy Lasorda thought it was cheating.
Regardless, anytime you try and take what actually happened and say this would have happened the same way, like that doesn't work quite well.
No.
You know?
Yeah. Regardless, I would have liked to, but they're not hitting. They've got three solo homers and a two-run single. Cespedes has finally snapped out of it Saturday. Tonight, Duda's got to snap out of it. And for Christ's sakes, Darno needs to hit a ball out of the infield. That's the key tonight, the whole lineup's got to start hitting. The other team that I think had a window, and it's now shut in my opinion, is Houston. They had their puncher's chance today to put it away. They had a four-run lead in the eighth inning, and they melted. And I think the defending American League champions will win Game 5 Wednesday at home.
We'll see.
So, this is weird for you to, I mean, no. 06.
It's been the last 3 years. I'm kind of used to it by now. I heard what Dr. G had to say on evolution. I was kind of in the same boat. I was pretty reserved. Once they had their slide, I mean, if you told me like in July this would happen, I would have been pretty disappointed because they looked really good. And then they just kind of ran out of gas, injuries piled up. And the way they came into the playoffs, I thought maybe they could beat Houston. I did. And I thought maybe they had a puncher's chance with the Royals. I knew if they got Toronto, they'd probably get killed. I expect a little bit more of a fight against Houston. That was disappointing. But they were just on fumes, I think, just overall. So, I've kind of come to peace with that. I think two things have helped me. One is that the Jets are actually playing pretty well. So normally by now they may be like 1-3 and one and four and I'm kind of done and feeling empty. And also CBS Sports, Scott Criscolo named Providence College's Chris Dunn as the number one player in the nation. Mm-hmm. So I got that coming up as well.
And I agree. On the opposite, I'm glad the Mets are hanging around because it distracts you from the fact that by the time both Romo and Dez are back, the Cowboys will probably be like 2-8, and I won't have to care about the football season anymore, at least as a fan, but not, of course, as an analyst. And you can check out Sports Evolution for all of your NFL needs. The Bruins are awful. I don't know if you've noticed, JR. They're 0-3, and they've given up 16 goals.
I'm starting to think maybe we should
win
to a Celtics game this year instead.
Well, you know, it's a night game. We can always second period skip out and go to, O'Reilly's or the place that has Arcanson on tap.
You think they're going to fire Claude?
See how the month plays out. If it's like November 1st and they're like, 1-11-2 or something, perhaps. But I don't know. I'm surprised they wouldn't.
Hockey's weird, though. It's happened before because teams try and turn the season like quickly. It's happened before where coaches will get like 3 or 4 games, and then if they start slow, they get canned. And because they're trying to salvage a season. So hockey's like the one sport where that's not unprecedented, that they'll only give a coach like 2 or 3 games sometimes, and that's it. Which begs the question, why bother? Why not just, if you're going to fire him after 2 bad games anyway, why not just do it in the offseason and build around it? There are many around here that wanted a complete clean slate. Like, they were upset that Don Sweeney was kept as GM because they felt he still had ties to Shirelli, and then they ended up keeping Claude. So they're kind of like, it was almost like a half-assed rebuild. So why not just clean house and restart? But, this happens when, and we've talked about this many times, because I think sometimes we ebb on the different sides of the fence on this one, but when you prioritize stupid stuff over, pure raw talent, and you sell off stars for 50 cents on the dollar, just because you don't like that they may be partying at night or whatever nonsense you got going on, or he doesn't fit some convoluted system you have, and that coach somehow wins a title that gains a little bit more power than maybe should have. That's what happens when you give away a all-star player like Tyler Seguin for, and Louis Erickson had a nice day today, but come on, for what they got for him, clearly not worth what they gave up. And we'll see if it happens again with Dougie Hamilton. But anyway, we're off on a tangent.
I think they'll get Dougie Hamilton back. I think this was kind of a borrowed thing, not borrowed thing, but I think they traded
him.
Because...
They didn't sign him to an extension?
Dougie? No, they traded him to Calgary.
No. I'm in Calgary.
Oh. I don't think so.
Either way. I wouldn't pay him anyway, but my point stands. Seguin is the big one. They gave Seguin away for nothing, and it made no sense at the time. For whatever stories or issues they had, the kid was clearly a star and had the makings to be a top player, and they
gave him away. They didn't get too much back for it, and it ends up hurting you long term. Now they're missing a scoring star like that.
Well, and they also, Chiarelli, boosted the cap, and now they're hosed for a couple of years. So there's really nothing they could do anyway. I think that's one reason why they traded Dougie's, because they knew they couldn't afford him.
Right, and they didn't think he was worth it. And Calgary gave him 6 years, $35 million, or $34.5 million.
Yeah, so.
So he's locked in there. But he, I mean, and that may be very true, that, you know what, this time around the guy wasn't worth it. But the Sagan one, I think, is going to haunt them for a while, until maybe they bottom out and pick up another guy like that. And the draft, a lot of people question where they went with the draft this year. So we'll see how long Claude lasts. I have a feeling it may not be too long, though, if they keep this up, because there is an expectation now that, you know, they have the talent, they should be a team that's in the playoffs. And to miss 2 years in a row isn't going to sit well. Even though they have a diehard fan base, it's not going to sit well around here.
Yeah, I concur. So I'll be, as the season progresses, because you're going to see a lot of goaltending issues. I mean, again, 16. I mean, three losses is one thing, but 16 goals. Mm-hmm. I mean, 2 years ago, Tuukka won the Vezina. They've got a lot of issues in that aspect. But so we'll see how things progress.
Hey! What is going on here?
Yes, lots are going on here, my friend, and that is, we're going back in time. This evening's edition of the Vintage Vault. Quite a bit of history tonight, JR, in many ways, arenas, cities, mm-hmm. states, months. For tonight, it is the explosion of evolution. Tonight in the Vintage Vault, we bring you Backlash 2005. A show we were supposed to have a guest on tonight, but he may be lost on the side.
Yeah, I think he's here, isn't he? Or did he come home already?
He said he was on his way home today. Oh, I didn't talk to him. Guess. Of course, when he's off, you know, he's permanently off. He is permanently off.
Physically, mentally, he's
yes. Yard gnome.
Yes. Mr. Otello was supposed to join us because he actually was at the show live.
Yeah.
But he's moping around Scituate Arts and Crafts Festival somewhere now, still looking for a...
Did you go this weekend?
No, it's the first time in a few years. Yeah, usually we do. It was just too much. We had too much going on. It's just a lot right now to...
I know he goes because I guess his grandfather had a booth or whatever, but I don't know. Hangs out with all the gypsies and bohemians. All right. May 1st.
Gypsies.
Tramps and thieves. 2005. Live from the Verizon. I'm talking like fucking Rotella now. From the Verizon Wireless Arena in Manchester, England, Mr. Sutton. No, just kidding. Manchester, New Hampshire. Of course, JR, the 34th state. I just gutted him. 34th state to host a WWE pay-per-view. 34th state. And a first, of course, in this state, live free or die. And, of course, three countries, Canada, England, and Puerto Rico, although that's more of a, whatever they call an annex. New state, of course, never been to New Hampshire. Also, JR, for the first time in pay-per-view history, Backlash not occurring in the month of April.
Yes.
The closest it ever came, Backlash 2000 in D.C. was on April 30th, the last day of the month. And a future Backlash will be on April 30th.
Mm-hmm.
That was the closest. Probably because with WrestleMania being, you know, April 3rd, probably want to have a decent four-week build to all the, you know, feuds and stuff. So couldn't fit it on, I guess it would have been, what, the 24th of April. Probably didn't have enough room.
May 1st is basically April.
Yeah, yeah. Give us a little history of this brand spanky new arena in beautiful Manchester, New Hampshire.
Opened November 15th, 2001, about a year and a half after they first broke ground. $68 million it cost, and that'd be $90 million in today's dollars. Architect was Populous and Lavallee Bressinger. Sheer Game Sports, the project manager, Le Monsieur Consultants with a structural engineer, and
René Goulet
Harvey, the general contractor. It is home to three tenants. The Manchester Monarchs of the ECHL. The Manchester Monarchs of the AHL played there till 2015, and then they went away, I guess. And the Manchester Wolves played there for 7 years at the AF2. Holds 9,852 for hockey, 11,140 for basketball, center stage concerts, 11,770. So that's probably about your capacity for this show here, 542 club seats, 34 luxury suites, 5 party suites. And that's it. Like I said, home of the Monarchs. UNH's hockey team plays some games there.
Go Cats.
Occasionally, well, they usually play Dartmouth in the battle for the, you know the name of the cup?
Name of the cup.
UNH and Dartmouth.
UNH and Dartmouth. The Live Free or Die Cup? No.
The Riverstone Cup.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, then the Hockey East, which was won last year by...
Providence.
I don't know. Did they win the conference? I know they won the whole thing.
Well, they won the whole bowl of wax. They probably didn't.
Won the whole fucking thing. Although, no, I don't as I will. Watched Major League on TV this weekend, it was win the whole thing.
Thing. Yeah. Let me see who won the... We'll look it up. I'll see who won the Hockey
So, East. Manchester, I had been once before with my buddy Charlie Houle and Adam Murray. We went for that Raw when Jeff Hardy and The Undertaker fought in the ladder match. That was in that mm-hmm. arena. So that was the one time I've been in that arena in Manchester, and it was a pretty good crowd on this night. Yeah, it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And would I rush back there? No.
No.
Probably not.
Nothing to do. Let's see. Awards, men's.
Awards.
Conference teams.
Get in the awards.
Get in awards. The defending 2015 was BU.
That's right. Yeah.
BU.
Because they were, but, I think PC was ranked. Oh, yeah, that was the whole thing. Remember they were the, like... 13 seed or whatever, but they had a home game because of some conflict.
Yeah.
It was a payment for the Dayton mess.
The Dayton, yes. All so right, there the you show. Go. Yes. By the way, last time Providence did win the Hockey East, 1996.
There you go. I'll take the National Championship.
Yes. And New Hampshire, the Wildcats last won it in 2003.
Who cares?
Your attendance, 14,000. Your buy rate, this surprised me. I know we don't really analyze buy rates like we used to, but considering how loaded the show kind of was, the buy rate was only 0.53. That seemed like a lot, considering, you know, who was on this show. And
yeah, well, that's not too bad. I mean, like a one is big for Mania. So, I mean, Backlash had half a Mania. That's not awful.
I thought I figured it would at least been in like the
event grossed over 700,000 from an approximate attendance of 14,000. Backlash helped earn $21.6 million in revenue. Versus 16.9 the previous year. So, pretty big bump over the year before. 5 million
yes.
more.
Yes. So, there you go. And your announcers back in the catacombs out in the back parking lot,
mm-hmm.
at least for the next few months. Good old JR Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. What is our gutted report for the evening?
Our sudden facts. We'll do as many of these as we can for Rotella's memory. Backlash, do you remember the song?
No, absolutely not.
It was Stronger by Trust Company.
Yes. Do you remember Trust Company?
No. World champion is Batista, Intercontinental champion Sheldon and Benjamin, World tag team champions William Regal and Tajiri, and your women's champion Trish Stratus. TV by the numbers, Raw 622 episodes, Heat 347, Impact 48. We had a death here in the world of wrestling.
What?
If you remember this one, it was a pretty famous one, pretty around this time. He had been featured recently on TV for TNA. And passed away, and actually, footage of him aired because it was pre-taped.
Oh, yes, yes.
Remember who?
Mr. Chris Candido.
Yes, on 429, former Dirty Tag Team Champion, ECW Tag Team Champion, and WCW Cruiserweight Champion, and NWA Champion, Chris Candido died at 33 from a post-surgery blood clot. In a shoot interview for our video, Tammy Sitch talked about his last 24 hours. Chris flew home after TNA tapings on 426 to Jersey, woke up in pain. It turned out he had pneumonia and had his lungs drained. Chris didn't want to have any general anesthesia, but after being told how painful the procedure would be, he decided to have it. Tammy left the room and came back 20 minutes later and was told he's gone. The medical staff found a blood clot, which is formed when Chris flew home from Orlando. And if you remember, he had broken his leg on the taping.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he was advised not to fly, and he did. I forget the whole deal, but he ended up, remember, he was managing the Naturals. And the footage that aired after he passed away was them celebrating because they won the titles with his assistants. I remember he's in like the wheelchair with the crutches and he's got the belt on him, the big smile on his face. And that was like the last appearance of him on TV. So really sad. I mean, just 33, freaky accident, busts his ankle. I think he was doing like a baseball slide or something along those lines. He busted his ankle up, flew and developed the blood clot. So scary stuff for a poor Chris Candido. So rest in peace, Skip.
Yes, very sad.
International Heat, Simon Dean defeated Robbie Brookside. The Heartthrobs defeated Domino and Eric Schwartz. And Hurricane defeated Maven. on Heat for the actual Backlash Heat. Tyson Tomko defeated Val Venus. Rhymes with
penis.
Very good. And we'll talk about a couple of debuts as we move along.
Okay. Let's dive in. Our first match, JR, is a title match. Mm-hmm. We have a two of the three from this evening. We've got the Intercontinental Championship on the line. Your champion still, as we mentioned, Shelton Benjamin, who's had it since Taboo Tuesday. Taking on a guy who probably is the face of the Intercontinental Championship, at least of the last 5 years. How do we get to this point?
On 4-4, Shelton Benjamin successfully defended his title against Chris Jericho and Christian by pinning Jericho. And a week later, Jericho brought Benjamin onto his highlight reel talk show. Jericho claimed that he had been in a funk since Taboo Tuesday. Jericho told him he wanted his belt back, and Shelton said he had his chance the week before and blew it, and another match should only bring along the same result. A brawl broke out, spilled to the floor, and was broken up by officials. Playing some mind games, a week later, Jericho came out and sang a track off Fozzy's latest album during Benjamin's match with Simon Dean. Shelton won the match, and Jericho applauded him from the aisle. The two had one more confrontation a week later that ended with a Benjamin Exploder suplex. Scott, when Benjamin won the title back at Taboo Tuesday, did you expect him to hold it this long?
No. No. I definitely would have thought he'd have lost it, like, before Mania or at Mania. I thought he would be involved in kind of a back-and-forth feud. So, no, absolutely not. I did not think he would hold it this far. Did you?
Yes and no. So, not because he wasn't talented enough, but I didn't know if they'd actually run with it for that long, booking-wise.
Right.
Only because of their ADD with the IC title. But good on them.
I mean,
that's true. Pay-per-view-wise, we haven't really seen many defenses from them, but that's because we were in that stretch of weird pay-per-views where it's like the Rumble, Mania, we never get IC title matches these days. So the last time we really started to defend was at Farce against Maven at New Year's Revolution, and then before that was Christian back at Survivor Series. So,
right.
Long-term rematch for the Taboo title, Taboo Tuesday title change, like we mentioned. Shelton had a nice long reign, basic mat work early with Shelton working the arm. Jericho gets pissy, slaps Shelton, then turns the match into a fist fight. They battle over a suplex, and that leads to some nice teases off the apron, ending with Jericho sending Shelton to the floor with a hurricanrana. Jericho landed funny on his neck, and I thought that could have been bad. Jericho gets a bit cocky. He hooks in the chin lock to wear Shelton down. Jericho wrestling as a heel here, chokes Shelton a bit, lands some stiff chops. Shelton reverses a whip to the corner and hits a stinger splash. Jericho hits a bulldog, but Shelton avoids a lion salt. Shelton gets a great leap to the top to catch Jericho with a superplex. Shelton pancakes Jericho and locks in sleeper with the body scissors. Crowd gets behind Jericho here, very split down the middle. Shelton misses second stinger splash, leads to a flurry of avoidances and a Shelton Samoan drop for two. Jericho hits an enziguri for a near fall and then hits a great springboard bulldog for a close near fall as well. Crowd getting heated up down the stretch. Shelton gets a T-bone, but Jericho gets a foot on the rope. Jericho blocks Shelton coming in and turns into the walls, but Shelton gets the ropes. Crowd is fully behind Jericho now. Trade-off of reversals leads to a Shelton cradle for the win. Great match, I thought, that really got cooking in the second half and led to a really tight finish. Jericho's really frustrated with the loss, and I thought this was a great way to open the show. I thought it was better than the Taboo Tuesday match, which you can say, you know, obviously this one they planned. They didn't have much time to plan the one at Taboo Tuesday, but I thought this really popped. I really like this match.
I did too. The only thing that perplexed me, I mean, the combination was great, and it definitely had a better flow. I think they went a little longer, about 14 and a half minutes. I still was trying to figure out why the crowd turned on Shelton, though. That perplexed me. He seemed to be pretty much riding the – I mean, obviously, Jericho's Jericho, but it still kind of puzzled me. Usually matches like this, they kind of go down the middle. So that surprised me that they kind of turned on Shelton during the match. But overall, I enjoyed it a lot. I feel like Jericho kind of did a little groundwork in this match to kind of, you know, negate, even though Jericho's just as big an aerial worker as Shelton is, I feel like he tried to switch his game up and ground down a little bit. But I enjoyed it. It was a great match, top to bottom.
Did you think going in that Jericho was going to regain the bell here?
Yes. Yeah, I did. But figured kind of as a return for losing at Taboo Tuesday. I thought that Jericho would kind of bookend it, kind of like Rock and Kurt did in 2000 into 2001. But
yeah, I liked it because in many ways they almost played off the Taboo Tuesday win as, I don't say lucky, but like fluky a bit. So this almost says, all right, here, take another shot, and then Shelton beats him again clean. So it was like a nice kind of hammering it back home again. And as we'll see, it kind of fuels Jericho in a different way anyway, but Yeah, I like this. I thought this was a really good opening match, and it kind of set the tone for the night. The crowd, even though they turn on Shelton a bit, I mean, you kind of get it, because it's not like he's fighting a pure heel, you know? He's still fighting. It's not like he's fighting, like, Snitsky or something. He's still fighting Jericho, so I can't blame that the crowd was behind Jericho, who was still basically a face. So whatever, that is, like, Tim better. But I thought the crowd was good here, and I thought this was a really hot opening match, and, you know, I'd go, like, 3.5-ish. Like, that's how much I enjoyed it. It was really fun.
Yeah, I give it a 3.5 as well. With some time and some work, I think that they definitely told a just as good a story, if not a better story, than Taboo Tuesday, and a good win for Shelton. My only thing, and it's got nothing to do with the match, is why the crowd kind of booed him. I was a little perplexed by that. But the match itself was very good, and this is just as big a statement win for Shelton as anything he's had to this point. That because we all thought, all right, well, Jericho's back. Shelton had a good run, and Jericho won it back, and he didn't. So it was a good shock there. Mm-hmm. So Shelton Benjamin retains his Intercontinental Championship. On a sidebar here, I don't know if you have the game on. I'm gonna have it on mute. But why are the umpires, like, huddling with Mattingly? Is this he came out and then the umpires started to
Maybe they wanted to shave his sideburns.
I don't know. No, he's got a shadow today. But I don't get it. I don't know if it's the umpire doing the whole. There'll be no shenanigans tonight. And now Terry Collins. But Aldi's not playing, and the Mets aren't that. Terry Collins isn't that stupid, so.
No, I got Raw on one TV and football on the other.
Oh, okay. What the hell's the game tonight? Oh, Steelers, Chargers.
Yes. No time for your nonsensical Mets.
No, that's right, of course. Yeah, because a Week 4 Monday night game is just as important.
Yeah, so for some of us it is, Scott. For some of us it is.
For some. I see. Wink, nudge. Next up, second title match of the evening, JR, the World Tag Team Championships on the line. Your champions, the upset-minded, as mentioned, Tajiri and William Regal, who won him in England mm-hmm. a couple months earlier. Multi-team match here. What a shock. When there's nothing to,
right.
When you can't have a tag team feud, slap them all in a match. How'd we get here?
We don't really have a build to here. We just have a bunch of stuff about the guys in the match. I guess we'll talk about that.
All right, well,
Tajiri and William Regal defeated La Resistance to win the titles on 2-4, like we said, in Japan. Mm-hmm. La Res had them since January 16th. So we have a few notes. This is La Resistance's final pay-per-view as a team. Shortly after the show, they began wrestling solo, trying to one-up the other. In early June, things boiled over. They faced off at an episode of Sunday Night Heat with Kanye. That's Conway.
Kanye.
I like the way it's where Kanye West got his name. It combined Conway and Savon Grenier. Kanye West was then drafted to SmackDown, officially ending the team. Conway will appear on pay-per-view again. We'll cover that. Savon would have one last appearance in 2006 Royal Rumble, and that's it for him. You get a few makeovers and actually hung around on TV through August of 07, which is when he would finally be released. After leaving, he would work the indie scene, dabble in some bodybuilding, bouncing and rapping, of course, and marrying the Kardashians, and then also open a wrestling school. Final pay-per-view record for La Rez, 5-6. You want to take a moment to eulogize Polar Resistance?
Well, good heel team. They had a good heel run. They had a good gimmick. Moderately decent matches. I wouldn't say stellar, but I wouldn't say they sucked. They were okay.
I would say maybe like a poor man's like Smoking Guns, in that they kind of ruled the tag division during a really shitty time for the tag division, but they were like a steadying force and the best of the bunch for many, you know, much of that time. And the Guns were always just there to throw the titles back on when they needed to eat up some time in 94 and 95 and 96. And that's kind of what La Rez was since 03. It's kind of how they had a couple feuds here and there, but mainly they would just throw the belts on them, lose to a super team, take them back. Yeah, and I forgot they actually extended their run and title run into 05 like this. But yeah, I mean, you know, they found their way. If you remember some of those early appearances, we talked about them in early 03. When they looked like they had the wicked indie tights with the tassels and everything.
I know, yeah.
Once they kind of got their shit together, they got some better looking tights and they kind of got their act. They started working a little bit harder and better as a team. You know, I think I came around on them as a unit. One of the other teams in this match, Maven and Simon Dean, had begun teaming in 2005 when Maven bought into the Simon System way of living. They remained a team until the draft split them apart, sending Simon Dean to SmackDown. Maven would be released in July. Bounced around doing some reality TV and indie wrestling, and he would hook up with the Home Shopping Network as a fitness guru. His final record, 2-5. So any thoughts on Departed Maven?
Well, you know, it's funny you say the Home Shopping Network. The doctor's wife bought him a...
Maven polo shirt?
But no, I bought him a Giants jacket or something off of Home Shopping Network, and sure enough, she had DVR'd it just to make sure she had the right jacket, and he looks at it and goes, "That's Maven." So Maven sold him his Christmas gift. It was pretty funny. You know what it reminds me of? Goes back to, remember what pay per view was it? I think it was WrestleMania 15. Remember when the New Age Outlaws went on QVC or something, right? Mm-hmm. Was that WrestleMania 15? I think it was. Something like that. It was one of those pay per views. They all went on QVC to sell like crap after the pay per view or something. I think it was WrestleMania 15. Anyway. Maven, you know, he had a decent run. He has two memorable moments. The goofy thing with Shelton at New Year's Revolution, of course, eliminating The Undertaker in the 2002 biggest, Rumble.
That's what everyone remembers him the most for. And then he had a little run at the end of the year with, teaming with all the anti-evolution guys. I thought his heel run had some promise. He was pretty good as the kind of, you know, cocky, aloof heel that we saw here through much of 05. I feel like they just waited too long to get him to that point.
Right. Yeah. No, they did. And by then, you know, they tried to give him a push in the late 04 as part of the whole thing with against Evolution, but by then he had nothing left. The roster was decent build to the point where he got kind of lost in the shuffle. So it was kind of unfortunate.
The Heartthrobs consisted of Antonio Thomas and Romeo Roselli. They began their careers in Eastern Wrestling Alliance and OVW as the Heartbreakers before being called up to Raw and receiving a new name. They made their debuts on April 18th in a loss to William Regal and Tajiri, hung around TV into early 06 before being released in February. After being released, they hit the indie scene with a brief stop in TNA. So the Heartthrobs. Too bad Rotella wasn't here, isn't that one of his stupid teams?
Yeah, he'd be ridiculously gushing over. They'd be better than Demolition, and he'd start rambling like a dope.
They have, again, we talk about Lara's looking indie. These guys look super indie, really over the top. But I will say they had a decent look and they had some charisma. I'm kind of surprised in some ways that they didn't last in a little bit longer and do a bit more.
Saying that, I do agree with you because you would think that they kind of had that Vince gleam. Like, oh, look at these guys with their, you know, their weird tights and their feather boas. And it seemed like right, perfect for him. So I was a little surprised that these guys didn't have have more legs as time progressed.
Regal and Tajiri. Doing all kinds of a couple names tonight. Regal and Tajiri are champions still. Great team on many levels. Super over as usual. Regal and Tajiri have the great teamwork. Regal grounds Antonio, and then Tajiri lights him up with some kicks and a great rolling submission hold. Tajiri is still super crisp out there. His offense just pops at you. Heartthrobs take over the double team Tajiri a bit. The crowd's pretty quiet here. Tajiri gets a sunset flip for the elimination. Simon Dean and Maven, or Staven, come out next, working together as gurus. Dean is pretty funny offense mixed with workout moves during the execution of them. So, like, you do Hindu squats and push-ups or different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maven and Simon work over Tajiri with some basic heel offense. Regal tags in, makes quick work of Simon Dean with a knee to the head. La Rez is out next, making their final appearance, like we noted. They are still hanging around. Tag division, a bit of a mess, like we said as well. La Rez jumps Regal on the floor. Tajiri's down and hurt. La Rez has good aggression. Tajiri comes back with some kicks. And I thought this was a nice showing by the champs. They're trying to run the table here. They grab control and pick up a near fall, but La Rez traps Regal in the corner and work him over. And then Conway rolls Regal up and uses the tights to eliminate him. And I think it's cool that they kind of hinted that there'd be a change, but I don't know. When you look at this soft division, I guess we can eulogize this after the match, but I feel like Tajiri and Regal are just your best bets. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like a waste to take the belts off them with the charisma they had, with the great teamwork they had, with the camaraderie they had. Like, I just feel like they were a good fit, and they should have been held on to longer until a better team came around to knock them off, or at the very least, maybe let them put over the new champs, which come out next, and that's Rosie and Hurricane. Hurricane gets a near fall on a cross body. Crowd is hot for Hurricane. Savon chucks Hurricane over the floor, over the top of the floor, and his leg whacks the post on the way over. Conway drops elbow off the apron to the floor as Larez beats on Hurricane. Hurricane escapes and makes a tag. Rosie cleans house, showing some good energy. Rocks Conway with a power slam for a near fall. Match breaks down. Larez has a double team spine burst on Rosie for two. Hurricane and Rosie hit a rocket launcher for the win and a really big pop. I'm sure 90% of that was Rotella mushmouthing and ball washing Hurricane. It's a fair guy.
Yes, very much so.
By the way, it was, you know, as much as I feel like Regal and Tajiri should have retained, this was a pretty cool moment, and the crowd was into it. Hurricane's been hanging around for a while. It's kind of a darling of fans in the company, and seeing him finally win some gold outside the cruiserweight division was pretty neat. You know, it was okay for a turmoil match, but this real lack of depth, and it's killing the division right now.
There's no doubt. I mean, this no knock on either Tajiri and Regal or Rosie and the Hurricane, but Larez is cooked. They're at the end of the line, obviously, and these other two teams are just slapped together stiffs. Well, one of the teams made Rotella stiff, but it's just sad. We're not talking Dudley's, Hardy's, and you know Edge and Christian. I mean, it's you know, we're not even talking, you know, 1989, you know, Rockers, Brainbusters, or Foundation. Not even close. And I think that is where the issue of having two tag team champions are, because you're going to see the same problem on SmackDown too. So this might be a situation where maybe they're getting to the point now where they need to maybe combine the titles. The tag division is obviously hurting.
But even beyond that, like, they can have just a feud or two if they use the right people. Like, that's why I thought Regal and Tajiri, and I don't fully remember. Maybe we'll see as we go forward, but I don't think they really stuck together much as a team. And look at the ones we just talked about when we were doing the fun facts. It's like they broke up. You know, they broke up Simon Dean and Maven and split them up with the draft, and then they're gone. Hothrob split up, and they're gone. You know, Larez. Like, why not just, as stale as it is, maybe just keep these teams together or bring in a bunch of new ones? Don't just kind of let the quality dip and not replace some of these teams. Like, I don't know. Why not keep Simon Dean and Maven together? Like, I thought they had some promise as a team.
Yeah, well, there wasn't anything for either of them left to do. It seems like, and I'm going to comment more on this in our next piece, it seems like that the roster was gaining a lot of gimmicks, but nothing you could really give any meat to. And Simon Dean was one of those. So it made perfect sense to give these guys, keep them together. There's nothing else for either of them to do. Would have given, kept Maven employed
right.
for a little while longer, you know?
Yep.
But sadly, you are talking about a severe lack of depth. And as we get through the blue brand shows, obviously in a few weeks, we'll have our next vault will be a blue show. You're going to see the same problem.
Kind of.
Not as bad as Raw. Yeah, no, not as bad. But definitely lacking a little bit. So we have new World Tag Team Champions, Rosie and the Hurricane. Big moment in Manchester. The yard gnome running around the aisles or running or
only
galloping or whatever.
With the nickname of or the acronym shit. And that would be right.
It fits in perfectly. Exactly. So the Hurricane and Rosie are your new World Tag Team Champions. Next up, a feud that... it seems like JR goes back like half of last year. and that is Mr. Money in the Bank and a guy who 1 year ago was quite further up the card, wasn't he?
Slightly. Yes. On 4-4, Chris Benoit defeated Edge in a hard-fought match. After the bout, Edge ran Benoit into the ring post and bashed his injured arm with a chair. A week later, Edge cost Benoit a match against Christian. On 4-18, Edge and Benoit wrestled again, but the match ended in a schmoz as the two men battled through the crowd. An angry Eric Bischoff made this match for Backlash, and the two would brawl again, with Benoit coming out on top on 4-25, and the match made was a last man standing. When's the last one of these jobs we had here? Was it Triple H?
There's had to have been one since. Was either of the... Kane Shane?
Oh, probably. No, they had the ambulance match.
Ambulance match was at
Survivor Series.
Was it Last Man Standing at Unforgiven?
I can check quick. Because I can't think of many others. Yes, it was. That's okay. Going to be the last one.
Yeah, it's got to be. I definitely don't think there was one in 2004. I'm sure we'll be told. But as far as I know, the last Man Standing was. Now, once we get into the mid-2010s, there's one every other month. So
right.
But this one, one that's been beaten in the ground, but not too bad at this point.
No, not at all. And it was good for Edge. It was a good spot for Edge because Benoit was like, he's really moved into that gatekeeper role for guys that want to move up to the main events. And Edge has to get through him now to take that further step up. So coming off the issues in late 04 and the Money in the Bank, another step in Edge's climb up the ladder as a heel. A good stip choice, I thought, for them. Benoit on the offensive to start, stomps Edge and lands a tight snap suplex. Benoit frustrates Edge, counters everything early. Benoit goes for a quick crossface, but Edge slides out. Benoit's stiff attack with knees and clubbing blows. The match spills to the floor and into the crowd. Benoit still dominates, and it was a cool atmosphere with him just beating the crap out of him in the crowd. back in the ring, Benoit hooks a sharpshooter on and then hits five rolling Germans, and Edge is just getting wrecked by this point. He falls to the floor, and that's the first count by the referee. Benoit then tries a suicide dive, but Edge smacks him with a trash can lid on the way down. Nasty bump that makes you cringe a bit, but Benoit actually did get his hands up, if you watch the replay, to absorb the blow, but it was still a pretty nasty bump he took on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Benoit beats the count, climbs up to the top, but Edge blocks him and hits a top rope superplex on a trash can. Edge punishes Benoit with the trash can lid. Edge targets the head as JR pushes a potential concussion issue for Benoit. Edge sets up a ladder, but Benoit stops him from climbing and then follows up and hits a German off it in a crazy bump. Benoit goes up to the top of the ladder but misses the headbutt. Tons of wild spots and bumps throughout this here. Edge tries to use a briefcase, but Benoit dodges and hooks the crossface. Edge taps, but it doesn't matter, so that gives Benoit some shine and a little bit of a visual win. Benoit hits a few more Germans, but Edge blocks and hits the impaler on a briefcase. Benoit barely beats the count on a spear, but Edge hits a second spear as soon as he gets up and then pulls a brick out of the briefcase and smashes Benoit on the back of the head with it. Really good stiff win, stiff brawl, and that gives Edge the win. And I like that it wasn't like super garbage stuff, but it was enough weapons that it made sense and it kind of brought the violence. But they didn't go over the top. You know, it wasn't like this wild, you know, ECW hardcore title type of brawl with like nonsensical weapons. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yes. I mean, this match didn't need cheese graters and hockey sticks.
Right, right. They just needed a few things and they worked them well. I thought they had unique spots. I thought they were smart spots. I thought the crazy bumps blended with some real hate between the two as well. You could really feel the hate between them. I thought the finish was smart, played off all the concussion stuff, and didn't make Benoit look weak at all because he basically got the win with the crossface. And then he, you know, took a brick to the back of his head to a guy that's already had issues to put him down for good. So I thought that was pretty good. And Edge takes another step towards legitimacy. So talk about the match and then tell me where this kind of ranks on your Edge scale.
I liked the match a lot. It was very violent. It was hard hitting. And I think that was a match Edge needed. He's kind of finally getting back into the groove a little bit in singles ranks. So saying that, transitioning to the next question, I think this is one of Edge's better singles matches of his career because for three reasons. Number one, he's getting out of the slump, a single slump that he had when he came back in 04, and we didn't really get a solid singles match out. In fact, he barely had one last year. I mean, he had Kane at Bad Blood.
Orton stuff was good.
The Orton stuff was good, yeah. The Vengeance match was but the Raw match the next night was very good. But now that the attitude has changed a bit, he needs to wrestle a little differently, and I think you saw that in this match here. He was a lot more vicious. He does get that, you know, his facial features have always been great. Now he, you know, with the jaw that sticks out and, you know, his facial mannerisms are very sinister, which is a good heel thing to have, obviously. And Benoit is an easy, at the time, an easy guy to be sympathetic. He's a babyface. He's always hurt. One thing he had to say about his career anyway, he always knew how to sell injuries well. Mm-hmm. And that's always a good psychology of a match. So the match was very good. I liked it a lot. It's definitely a stepping stone match for Edge. We've talked about this often.
Well, from SummerSlam to now, his big matches on pay-per-view, like how would you rank them in as far as like building him up as a star, right? So you have the SummerSlam three-way, you have Unforgiven, he was hurt. So then you got Survivor Series with the main event.
Mm-hmm.
New Year's Revolution, he beats
Shawn, and then he's in the...
No, Rumble.
No. New Year's Revolution, he's in the chamber.
Right.
And then the Rumble he beats Shawn.
Has a decent showing, then he wins Money in the Bank. So, I mean, I think Money in the Bank has to be number one.
Yeah, Money in the Bank's number one.
I guess the win
even though he
Shawn.
Cheated, I think beating Shawn's two. Yeah.
Yeah, I put this three.
And then I think the main event at Survivor Series 4, unless you think he was overwhelmed by all that.
No, I thought he did well, and that was good heel stuff. And then I put the Rumble 5. He had a good showing there. And then...
New Year's Revolution, I feel like he's the chamber. I feel like he kind of came off as a bitch.
Yep,
a little bit.
How about did he fight a Taboo Tuesday?
Yeah, he fought. He was in the tag with Benoit. And he walked out.
Yeah, that was pretty good too.
Yeah. Let's put it this way: I think he's recovered from New Year's Revolution because I think he did come off as kind of a bitch because the main crux, of course, of that storyline match was, of course, Triple H, Batista, and Orton. Oh, I'm sorry, since we're honoring him. So I think he did get kind of lost in the shuffle in that match, but I feel he's recovered. Money in the Bank, he can't argue it. It's still the standard bearer. And then this match, I think he really showed himself as a guy that will do anything. The whole premise of Edge's gimmick at this point is he wanted his spot. Now he has it. He will do anything to keep it. That's the gimmick. So the brick in the briefcase was genius.
Yeah.
Pure genius. Because the gimmick, his gimmick is, this is my spot. You're not taking it away from me. My briefcase, my moment. You don't know when I'm going to do it, although they haven't really established what. The one thing about the briefcase itself is you really can't talk about it for a few more months. It's not really established as to what the storyline hook will be with this briefcase. It's a nice thing to have, obviously, but clearly creative doesn't know what to do with it yet. That's fine. They don't have to do anything with it yet. You could focus on Edge without needing to deal with the briefcase yet, which is good. But his gimmick is, I want my spot. I've deserved my spot. I don't deserve this. This is my spot, and I'm going to take it. And now that I've got it, I got it at WrestleMania, no one's taking it away from me, not even the rabid, quote, Wolverine. So the psychology of this match is fantastic, and it really has evolved Edge into this new type of you know, this next chapter of his character.
Yeah,
so
I liked the brick too. I thought it played well with the story they had going on with Benoit's concussion and then the arm, everything else. It was, like I said, there was a lot of hate mixed in. It was hard hitting. I thought they did a nice job.
Mm-hmm. So Edge wins the last man standing with a brick. Longest match of the night, 18:47, and that's fine. I think it's the longest match of the night. The other one might be a little longer. Let me see. Nope, it's not. Okay. Longest match of the night at 18:47. All right. Jerry Lawler gets in the ring.
Well, before we go backstage just for one quick moment. Lita and Kane talk about what they're going to do to Viz and Trish and then make out. And we'll talk about this, but I thought this whole thing was really
disgusting.
Weird.
It was gross.
But it's a really weird just...
Oh, that, Kane
raped her. He raped her and knocked her up. And then, like, held her hostage, beat the shit out of her fiance, and like, now they're a happily married couple. It makes no sense. It's so stupid.
It's just gross. And he's making, like, the...
I don't even care about
deep
that.
Breathing.
I don't... Whatever. Like, that
that's the cherry on the... That's the cherry on the sundae of weirdness.
At least makes sense. Well, we'll talk about more of that in a minute. I want to get to it. But, yeah, King comes out, and he brings out all the divas to talk about some new magazine they're featured in.
Of course. If King's in the ring, what do you expect to happen next? Gratuitous sex. But anyway.
So Stacy, Candace, Victoria, Maria, Lillian, and Christy all come out. King shows his favorite photo of each of them, and he's at his pervy worst here as always. And then Chris Masters comes out.
Who?
He's a newcomer here, and I'm sure when he has his first match, we'll really dive into his background. Mm-hmm. But he has a great entrance, a great look, all jacked up. He's got a really long entrance. He comes out, poses at the top of the, you know, top of the ramp, but he's got the music and the lights all timed to his poses. So
I love the cape.
Yes, and he was really, I mean, he got that interest down, like, immediately, and he has pretty good charisma immediately, at least connection-wise. So he comes out, offers $3,000 to any fan that can break his master lock, Phil Nelson. He had been doing that on Raw as well. Masters picks a shorty and doesn't realize it's actually a jacked-up woman. And Masters makes a lot of man jokes to her, bullies her hard, calls her sir, says she puts a man in Manchester. Masters wrecks her with a hole, shaking her all around. You know, good heel stuff, it didn't drag on. But I don't know. I'm not sure I feel about the man-on-woman stuff that they do here. Like, they could have just picked a guy, like a tiny, scrawny guy, and let him beat him up, and you would have gotten the same effect than, like, a jacked-up woman. I don't know. It felt weird. You know, I like that they blended these two segments into one, so it didn't, like, kill additional time. It just kind of flowed one into the next. I liked that part of it. Mm-hmm. Oh, they got the diva shit out of the way. They got the master stuff and combined it to one little package and then got out of there. But yeah. What did you think of Masters off the bat?
I love it. You know why? Because it's got this, you know, you and I are old souls when it comes to wrestling. And anything that kind of has a hint of that old, cool 80s Federation gimmick works for me and both of us. And this is something you would easily see in, like, 1986, you know, guy at house shows, you know, looking at, well, you know what he was? You know what he was pretty much mimicking? He was mimicking the early days of Superstar Billy Graham when he was doing the arm wrestling stuff.
Right, and
almost the same thing.
Kind of the narcissist too, is with the what he was doing with the posing and the mirrors, and a little Paul Orndorff with the, what was it, Gary Spivey, Mr. Wonderful.
Was it Gary Spivey?
That was his name, right?
Was it Dan's brother, Spivey? Was it? I don't think it was Spivey.
Like,
yeah, the guy with the bad disco outfit and that ridiculous the afro.
Yeah, that was like a helmet almost. It was like.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't Spivey. Afro. I have to look it up. It wasn't Spivey.
Gary Spivey, I thought.
Was it Spivey?
Spivvy.
Spivvy.
Speaking of Dan Spivey, if you didn't hear the interview Kevin Kelly did with him, it's well worth a listen.
Did he talk about his brother helping? Talk about his brother helping Paul Orndorff?
No, he talked about his time with the SOBs. So Gary Spivey. Yeah, psychic Gary Spivey.
You're Gary Spivey.
He's like wearing like a, I don't know, it's like a fleece blanket shaped like a hair.
It is. It looks like something you clean a toilet with.
It's really like... weird. Weird guy. Yes, remember he was the inspiration for Mr. Wonderful when he was using that gimmick and he came out the mirror. Yeah. We watched on one of the Nitro rewatches. Remember that it was Johnny B. Bad that didn't really kick him and he like sold it. And he fell out, fell down. Remember?
Yeah. Wow, it's gigantic now. Good Lord. He's still around? He's 57.
Gary Spivey.
He was real? I thought it was a guy that like Oli invented. He's
it was real. Yeah.
I never knew that. I thought he was just some shitty thing that freaking Oli came up with or something. Wow, I didn't know that. Anyway, back to Masters quick. Yeah, I mean, don't you get that feeling? I mean, it's pretty much a modern version of what superstar Billy Graham used to do in AWA. Out in San Francisco and Roy Shire's promotion. That should be the music that plays when your boy Big Al makes his official Boneheads debut.
It's official. He's been to Boneheads like 20 times
already. No, I mean like his official meal.
Okay.
Like when he has his first. No, I know he's been there. I mean like when he has his first meal. That's the music you that should play when he has his first. When he has his first. What was the first thing Juliana had? Probably chicken tenders, right?
Probably grilled cheese or some shit.
Yeah. So when Big Al makes his debut at the. Oh, you know, I haven't talked to you, lad, but on a side note.
Uh-oh.
Buffalo chicken hash.
Oh, so good.
Holy shit, man.
It was really good.
Awesome.
I just want like more breakfast from them. It's all really good.
Oh, my God. For those that may not know, Boneheads last Sunday did a brunch buffet for the 9 a.m. or not, what was it, 9:30 kickoff? 9:30 for the Dolphins, Jets, and London. And, of course, my PIC was there with Big Al and the gang, Mr. Flanagan, the crew, Cowboy. And the food looked amazing. And then you said buffalo chicken hash, and I was taken right there. Now, the chicken and waffles,
mm-hmm.
You told me that it wasn't maple syrup, right? It was the sauce they use on those on the
pour some sugar on me sauce.
On the pour some sugar on me wings.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they use. They have chicken and waffles on the menu.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Montori,
they do. That's
will tell you. They have it on the menu, and you can order that all the time. So it's there, that's what it was that they had out: the chicken with the pour some sugar on me, and then the waffles.
Oh. Look like a good spread. And, of course, the usuals. But when you said buffalo chicken hash, that blew me away.
It was good. It was delicious.
That may have to be like a Sunday special. He may have to make that a late night like bar special. Buffalo chicken hash. Soaks up the beer.
It was wonderful. Just like Mr. Wonderful.
That's right. And Q-tip head. So, all right.
Go backstage.
And so, anyway, Masters is an awesome gimmick. I love it.
Yeah. Big Vis meets up with Trish Stratus. He's ready to cash in on his prize for eliminating Kane. Vis gets all sexy and reveals some lingerie that he bought for Trish and talks all sexy. And kind of interesting turn for Vis as this big, giant sex machine that we'll get into a little bit more
yes.
in a minute. But, yeah, so that's what's going on. So basically Trish has hired Vis, and we'll talk about it in a moment. But and it sounds like his prize will be a little something-something.
Little pour some sugar. Little pour some sugar on me syrup. Okay. All right. Indeed it is, complete with his weird kissing and strange noises and strange everything.
It sounds like the guy singing it sounds like a guy that like plays the organ at church, you know what I mean?
Yeah, precisely. Ave Maria,
I am the Lamb of God. comes the Lamb of God.
Oh God.
You're singing it like Jesus is in a storyline. Well, Bischoff
he
was.
He would be probably. In a year later.
In a year later, the year he would be, precisely.
Year from the show.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. Let's get us through this.
On 4-4, Trish Stratus was set to wrestle Christy, but beat her down before the bell. She then turned to Lita and assaulted her injured knee. The next week, Kane looked to avenge his wife and began stalking Trish around the arena. Trish met up with Lita.
Like he did to his wife.
Right? I'm going to rape you, too, and then we'll all be a big, happy family. Fucking yeah. Three's Company or some shit. Kane would meet up with Lita and told her that Trish was scared of him. Lita rewarded him with a kiss. Just like John Ritter coming into the friggin' door. On 4-18, Trish called Lita to the ring and apologized for everything that happened, and they tried to make up, and Kane said, let's all just be sister wives. Lita didn't buy it, called Trish a bitch. Kane then made his way out, grabbed Trish in a chokehold. What a great face he is. As he was then doing that, Viscera came down and wiped Kane out. Vis picked up Trish over his shoulder and walked off. Later that night, Vis reminded Trish that they would have to go on a date now because he helped her. Trish tried to back her way out, but Vis planted a kiss on her before she could. We would get highlights of the date the next week as Trish and Vis dined at a fancy restaurant. Vis spent the dinner not so subtly hinted that he wanted to get down with Trish, even revealing that he bought condoms before the date. Trish refused to give in to the big man, telling him that she had to take out Kane before he would get any type of action. And following WrestleMania, Trish began to be bothered by a herniated disc and it was decided she needed to take some time off. So she was taken out off TV here and returns in September and actually took the title with her as champion, so. We'll talk about that a little bit further as we talk about this match, an extension of the Lita-Trish feud. Kane and Lita being in love, like I said, is very weird after all they went through. And Kane's basically a face. He's choking Trish. He raped Lita. And the baby's dead. The whole thing is just weird. Like, I just don't... They should have at least... I don't know. The way they had Lita fall in love with him was asinine because, like, she just saw it. He didn't do anything particularly good. It's just that Snitsky was a bigger dick for causing her miscarriage, and she just started to like Kane. Like, they should have had her, like, get knocked on the head and not realize what she was doing. I don't know. There had to be more to it than what they did. Like, it looks stupid, you know? And it's not like they're playing it up like she's manipulating him at this point anyway. It's just the whole thing was odd.
Well, the whole thing was odd. The match was odd. I think sadly, this was just a vehicle to allow for Trish and Lita to be to feud without wrestling. Pretty much what it comes down to feud without wrestling.
Yep.
And they just used these two, and that was it. It was mercifully 6 minutes. Kind of reminded me of the Mabel matches in '95. I don't know. Did Mabel wrestle Isaac Yankum? Probably not, because they're both heels, so I doubt it.
I have sex with Isaac Yankum. I remember that. So Lita's still in the crutches.
Yeah.
A fine full-time addition to the roster. I thought this was a decent use of him. Trish is still smoking hot here. Vis gains a quick control, but misses a splash in the corner and gets knocked to the floor. Kane hits a shoulder block off the top. Kane hammers away in the ring. Vis lands a heel kick to stop him and then thrusts his hip at Trish, which made me laugh. Does like the big friggin' Will Ferrell from... Wedding Crashers hip thrust at her. Vis slams Kane down but misses an elbow as Trish mocks Lita's limp. Kane grabs Trish, but Vis splashes him in the corner and hits a Samoan drop for a near fall. Vis hits a spinning sidewalk slam. Some decent-looking power offense due to his size. Kane comes back, hits a top rope clothesline, but Vis blocks a chokeslam and knocks Kane to the floor. Vis follows out, but Lita tries to protect her husband and gets shoved to the ground. Vis misses a splash and runs into the ring post. Trish tries to use a chair, but Lita smacks it back at Trish with her crutch. Vis hits a big sit-out powerbomb for a near fall. I actually thought that was it. Vis pulls Lita in the ring and makes sexual gestures with his tongue. Kane makes a save with a big boot and chokeslam and picks up the win. After the match, Trish berates Vis and says she would never sleep with a fat loser like him, even if he had won. Trish vows to get a real man and vows to love him instead. Vis shakes her around in a bear hug and chucks her to the mat and it drops a splash on her. And again, that was writing away Trish's back injury so she could go ahead and rehab. I actually thought the match wasn't that bad. There was a lot of overbooking and some decent near falls, some big power impact. It looked sloppy and awful on paper, but I thought they kind of made it work beyond the stupid Kane stuff. And I didn't think they needed, again, we're back. 05 is a weird year. It's like they, in many ways, go back to the, I don't want to say Attitude Era style, but we'll see it throughout 05 that they started to kind of push the envelope again in that direction. And all of a sudden, now we're getting another uptick in men versus women stuff. And, like, I just, they could have written, you know, written Trish off differently. They got to lead a smacker with a crutch in the back, anything. But I mean, to have this, you know, toss her around like a rag doll in a bear hug and then slant, drop a splash on her, I just thought it was unnecessary.
Yeah, I agree. And at least the match was short, and you know, there are a couple of decent, you know, slams, and Kane had a nice DDT, but the match really wasn't much. And like I said, I think it was just a placeholder for kind of a replacements for Trish and Lita actually not wrestling. Kind of sucks because Lita's injury has taken away what really could have been a red hot feud. If they were both healthy and we could have had Trish Lita matches, I think we'd have had a much better
situation.
Well,
at the very least, that Mania would have been better. And then, you know, they could have went wherever. Maybe they could have done like a mixed tag here with Kane and Visser or something like that. But it's, I mean, I think Trish was too hurt here at this point. I don't want to wrestle. But again, I don't know why we needed, you know, her to get chucked around by Vis. I didn't feel necessary. I feel like they could have went about writing her off in better ways.
Yeah, I agree.
But the match was, I mean, you know, we'll see a lot of this here coming up, but I thought the match actually wasn't too bad. All things, when you looked at it on a paper, you're like, oh God, this is going to be awful. But, you know, Vis hustled a bit and Kane landed some decent shots in, and you had all the drama at ringside. So,
yeah, yeah.
But
I mean, at least
Kane and Lita thing still just befuddles me.
Yeah, it really makes no sense whatsoever. And, the fact that it was, you know, only 6 minutes, they did what they needed to do. That was pretty much it. They kind of sleptwalked their way through it. And we'll see some changes in Vis as time progresses. Again, I don't think anybody thought he'd be, you know, major of anything, but you know.
No, he's a hell of a coxman.
The roster needed some work. So all right, so Kane wins and continues to be madly in love with his prison rape wife that he took care of. All right, why don't we take a break?
Sorry I raped you and got you pregnant, but let's be friends.
Let's be friends. Four matches in.
Look at my girlfriend.
Four matches in, and
she's the only one I raped.
And now I'm going to kiss her and make funny noises.
Not much of a girlfriend.
Ugh, gross. Two big matches left, the two matches that pretty much make this show. Entertaining so far. Nothing too bad. Opener was good. Last Man Standing was good. Tag was for what it was. And the awesome Chris Masters beginning. So, all right. Why don't we take a break? Two matches to go. But first, many words.
Why won't she let me wear this cape?
Because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We featured the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard and the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows, not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Hey, this is Scott Keith, the former Net Cop. You're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
Right, we are back here reviewing Backlash 2005. I'm going to direct your attention to our crush, our only girlfriend. That's placetobenation.com. And speaking of getting busy, Between the Sheets number 12 is here with Chris and David Bixenspan, October 6th through the 12th of 1997. And that was a big week, Scott. They talk about Brian Pillman's passing, how it was handled by the WWE, beginning of DX, Jim Cornette's rantings and ravings about WCW. So a lot to talk about here with Zellner and Bix on the new Between the Sheets. This Week in Wrestling for October 11, 2015 was up. Steven was celebrating Thanksgiving, and so Pete and Johnny take care of that for you. All Japan Excite Series number 10. Parv and Steven are back to talk about some All Japan action. Tag Team's back again, number 9. Kelly and Marty are back as well after a layoff, talking bigger, better with their return. Looking at 4 tag team matches from WrestleMania 3 they analyze. So be sure to check that out. If you haven't listened to that show yet, it's pretty good. And just finished the one a little bit ago about the Rockers and Rose and Summers. They explored that feud in AWA, which was really good chat as well. Parv is here for you Ric Flair fans with his mini-series, Fair for Flair. It is a 4-podcast piece for you. It's all on one post on PlaceMediation.com. So if you click that, you'll have all 4 loaded up in SoundCloud. And they're also on the PWO-PTBN podcast feed as well. Part 1. He welcomed in Marty, and they discussed Ric Flair's in-ring strategy from a kayfabe perspective. Part 2, Parv went alone, talking about the art of the promo. He broke down all of Flair's big promos from 91 and 92 in the WWF. So we're checking that out. Part 3, Pete joined Parv. They talked about Ric Flair's top 20 matches. And then part 4, Parv was joined by Charles from PWO to talk about Flair's case as the greatest wrestler ever as part of the project going on at Pro Wrestling Only. So definitely check that out from Parv. Did a great job with that series. If you're a big Flair fan, it's really a must listen. New installment of Seinfeld. Of course, he did The Pledge Drive, a few episodes into season 6. Chris Jordan with his first ever Stranger Things list of greatest monthly matches. He did October, so he talks about his favorite or the matches he thinks are the best throughout wrestling history in the month of October. Scott, our Vince Vault refresh kind of did a little do-si-do. So we had gotten all the way to WrestleMania 12. And decided we want to go in and fill some of the gaps as we try and continue to release these ebooks. So we're doing the Saturday Night's Main Events. And we're going to do the whole first installment before we get back into where we're at. And we got some other stuff planned, too, that we'll keep you all abreast of. But up last week was Saturday Night's Main Event number one from May 11th, 1985. And then the second one will be up this week. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned, the ebook, if you click on the right-hand column, placemanation.com, there's a banner that takes you to a free download at barnesandnobles.com, an electronic book of our reviews from 1985 through 1992. And they're all refreshed. We've rewritten them over the last year or so. So be sure to check that out if you're interested in catching up. That way, a new reaction show was up for NXT TakeOver. Will was joined by Johnny P, Chris Zellner, Pete, and Johnny Sorrow, breaking down a show that many people spoke very highly of. Sports Evolution brought you a preview of NFL Week 5 in the postseason. So if you really haven't caught that yet, be sure you do. And they'll be back. What are you doing, Wednesday this week, Scott?
Wednesday this week, yes. We will, of course, talk postseason.
You know the preview. Crew yet? What do we got on?
Looks like the should be the normal four, myself, the doctor, Cowboy Senior. Maybe Schmitty might join us. We'll see.
All right. New episode of the PTBN Rewatch Party, Raw Live Watch July 12th and July 19th, 1993. Steve Willey leading that train with Glenn Butler, Jordan Duncan, Jason Greenhouse, and Chad Campbell, risen from the dead, for that show there. Be sure to check that out. Our excellent WWE Network adventure continued on as well, Scott. Installment number 8 was World Class episode 11-11-82. So we're plowing through World Class now.
Yes.
Because we chronologically watch everything that the network has to offer. And we do, you know, it's me, you, Chad, Greeny, Dan, formerly Brad. But we go through this and... we go through this and we have different categories. So it's not a straight review, but... I think it's a cool format, so check that out.
Yeah, it's if you haven't read it yet, those shows, a lot of the stuff on the network you can't do like minute by minute, play by play. You'll bang your head against the wall. I don't think you can get your share of Magic Dragon and Checkmate matches, but we kind of give you like a special kind of different way to look at it, almost like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 kind of perspective. So if you haven't checked them out, please do. They're very good.
So the be sure to check that out. Yes. And NBA preseason, of course, is underway. That means the season starts very soon, and the NBA team has been going strong. Adam and Andrew have been delivering weekly shows here, previewing all the different teams, and they got a couple more going on. They're talking about the teams that'll be the most fun to watch. They'll talk about the top contenders, the long shots. So there's a few more of those to come that will go right into opening night of the NBA, which is just a couple weeks away now. So that's all you got. PlaceToBeNation.com, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, Place2BNation. And that's it. So be sure to check us out.
Precisely. All right, let's head back to Manchester, New Hampshire, for a Backlash of 2005. Rotella wishes he had that guy's hair. Rotella wishes he had any hair. We have a special tag team match, JR, and I think a lot of people thought this match was bringing the buy rate even more than the main event would.
Give it to someone special. Almost Christmas music time. They had Christmas music on Hallmark. I was in the mall last weekend.
Good grief.
I mean, I'm an early Christmas music guy, but I need like a couple weeks into November, and then I can go.
I'm
good before Thanksgiving. I'll listen even before then. Like, seriously, like November 1st, right? Usually when the first Sirius stations pop up.
Yeah. Usually Holly starts first.
Yeah, that's the best.
And then the Traditions one, I like that one. And then the Country one.
Piece of shit.
It's just, what? It's Bing. It's Bing. You wouldn't understand that.
What's your Bing?
Anyway, what's wrong with Bing?
Google's better. On 4-4, Shawn Michaels limped down to the ring to address the fans and talk about his WrestleMania classic the evening before. As he was speaking, Muhammad Hassan and Daivari interrupted him. Hassan went on a rant about Americans embracing mediocrity and cheering for losers like Michaels and has-beens like Hulk Hogan. You're a loser! After being called a loser one too many times, Michaels smacked Hassan in the face. They brawled a bit, but Michaels couldn't overcome the odds, and Hassan locked him in the camel clutch while Daivari kicked him in the head. On 4-11, Michaels was set to wrestle Hassan, but Hassan told Shawn he had to beat Daivari to earn a match with him first. Hassan would get involved and cost Michaels a win. Later that night, Michaels demanded a handicap match, but Bischoff told him to find a partner, and then he'd grant Shawn a tag match at the pay-per-view. Shawn made his way back to the ring, dropped to his knees, and asked Hulk Hogan to come back for one more match to help him wipe out Hassan and Daivari. Hassan and Michaels would face off a week later, but Daivari interfered, causing a DQ. The assault continued as Hassan hung Michaels over the top rope by wrapping a towel around his neck. Just as things got out of control, Hulk Hogan came charging to the ring to make the save. Hogan and Michaels would run Hassan and Daivari off, pose to close the segment. And on 4-25, we brought back Mean Gene Okerlund for a great promo when he interviewed Hogan and Michaels. Hogan had said he heard the one more match chance at the Hall of Fame, and it was his dream to team with Shawn Michaels. And of course, after being fired from WWE in June 2003 over a payout dispute in his Mr. America phase, Hulk Hogan was offered a slot with TNA, an extension of the NWA. In fact, the NWA champion Jeff Jarrett attacked Hogan at a press conference in Japan in October and bloodied him with a steel chair. Hogan was slated to face Jarrett for the NWA title at their first three-hour pay-per-view, Victory Road, in November of 2004. However, due to Hogan's back and hip issues, he never signed officially, even though TNA still used the clip after it aired and after they knew what was going to happen. In the meantime, Hogan's family started shooting episodes of a new reality show, Hogan's Knows Best, which started airing in July. Camera crews were in Los Angeles shooting the Hall of Fame appearance in WrestleMania. So Hulk Hogan returns to the ring. At the time, were you surprised they did it here versus WrestleMania? And at the time, was it weird to see him team with Shawn? Like, I feel like I always thought of dream teams and matches with Hogan, and for some reason, Shawn never seemed to fit that bill. Like, I always saw, like, Austin, Rock, I don't know. Like, right. Guys like that. Like, for some reason, I never pictured Shawn, like, as a Hogan dream partner. Like, even Brett made sense to me. But in my mind, I can never reconcile, for some reason, Shawn is, I don't know, maybe because they never crossed paths when Shawn was a star before. I don't know. It's weird.
Question one, I'm not surprised he did it now, because it's the same philosophy with why Austin didn't come out at WrestleMania 16 and they saved him for the next month, because they got the buy rate anyway for Mania.
I think we talked about Mania was really loaded.
Yeah, and I think they wanted Shawn and Kurt. I think they wanted that match because that was one of the headline matches. Question two, yeah, those two I never expected. Because in your back of your mind, you're like, yeah, Shawn's great, but Shawn isn't Hogan, or maybe some think he's not. Austin, Rock, you know, yeah, Brett, somebody like that, you know, even Taker, something like that would fit a dream match with. But seeing them together was very unique and very different.
Well, once it happened and they were involved, then it kind of, oh yeah, okay. It's just one of those things I never thought of like beforehand. Like Shawn was never like, Hogan's going to come back to do something with Shawn. Like, I don't know. I pictured like everyone else but him. But once it happened, you know, it really wasn't bad.
Yeah. That was a fun match. I mean, Daivari obviously was the guy who brought the actual wrestling kind of acumen. Hassan had the look, and he didn't work too bad here. They had good heel, you know, double team work, I think. For the most part, he was protected. Obviously, Shawn did the yeoman's work on his team, but Hogan got his spots in. I like the spot where he pulled the kid's hat off, and then
it was a crazy mismatch, though, on paper.
Yeah,
I mean, it was like a Saturday Night's Main Event in some ways, but like it just shows. I don't want to say how much they've kind of botched. I don't know. It just felt like, okay, it's a good dream team, but like, I don't know. Hassan's, I don't want to say he's getting buried by this, but it makes him.
I would have
realized just not how big he is.
I would have had Daivari eat the pin.
Well, I don't even care about the pin. I'm saying just being in the match. But let's talk about the match. So Hassan and Daivari have been attacking, ganging up on Michaels, turns to Hogan for the match. The crowd is hyped for Shawn, but through the roof for Hogan when he comes out. And Hogan was in great shape here, too.
Yes.
There's a strong buzz in the crowd as Hassan and Daivari bail, and let everyone kind of soak it in. Hogan works a basic opening sequence with Hassan as the crowd's chanting his name. Daivari comes in, and Hogan mows through both of them with some of his classic repertoire, including the double big boot with Shawn. Daivari gets some offense in, but it's very limited as Hulk Hogan. So Hulk Hogan tags back in and chucks him to the floor. Shawn tags in and whips Daivari, hitting an elbow off the top and upper and setting up sweet chin music, but Hassan cracks him from behind with a pipe. And I thought that was a decent way to turn the tide, but it kind of makes it sound like even weaker. They needed a weapon to not get squashed by these two guys.
Right.
But at least it gave him an in to get some offense. So Hassan and Daivari work the back of Shawn as Hogan rallies the crowd. It's a really basic assault. Hassan hits a nice underhook backbreaker to a camel clutch. Shawn powers out of that, hits the electric chair. Hogan gets a hot tag, cleans house. Daivari gets hit with the big boot, and he plays to the crowd before the leg drop. And then Hassan whacks Hogan with the pipe again, or whacks Hogan this time with the pipe. But Hogan hulks up, hits a big boot again, but Hassan grabs Hogan's leg to block the leg drop. So Shawn hits sweet chin music on Daivari, and Hogan covers for the win. I thought the match was fine. Like I mentioned, kind of a basic extended Saturday Night's Main Event style of match.
Right.
But the heat was great, and they delivered everything you'd want from Hogan and Shawn here. Like, you know, it was kind of a sacrifice of Hassan Daivari did take the pin. I'm not sure if you got confused on that, but Daivari is the one that got pinned.
Well, I'm looking at our notes from the board, and it says Hogan pins Hassan.
Trust your eyes, nerd. Don't worry about what the internet says. it was definitely Daivari.
Stick to your little writing.
It was definitely Daivari. And then Sean and Hogan pose for a while. They bring that fat fan in with the Hogan tattoo on his back.
That was gross. I thought it was more gross, that or the Kane kissing thing.
I mean, it was fun. It was a nostalgia match. Everyone was Dynasty Hogan. And in some ways, it was fine not to have a real heavy story or match like to throw. Even though the sacrifice of Kasana bit, it was pretty light this match, show, which was good. It was a Hogan nostalgia match. And not many people knew if Hogan was going to wrestle again. You know, this felt like it could have maybe just been a one-time thing with Sean.
Mm.
You agree? Did you think at the time he was back for a few more? Or?
No, I think this was it. I think this was a vanquishing of Hassan, and then Sean would move on and maybe refeud with Kurt or something else. I didn't expect Hogan to stick around. Be honest with you, and it ended up, I guess, happening. I don't want to tip our hand, but at the time, I thought after this match that Hassan was going to go to SmackDown.
Well, he kind of had to. I mean, there's nothing much for him to do on Raw.
Precisely. Exactly. So I think he was obviously maybe they were preparing for this match a few couple months earlier. I don't know if they had done it. I don't know. Maybe if it was booked for here, mm-hmm. even before Mania, before the Hall of Fame, before the one more match champ. But I feel like when they debuted Hassan, they're like, oh, what a good character. But I'm like, oh, you look at Raw and where the hell is he going to go?
Yeah.
You know, we already have Masters and other mid-card gimmicky heels. I can't see him sticking around. So I felt after this match that Hassan was heading to SmackDown. Without knowing, obviously, what happened. But,
right.
But it was fun. It was unique to see the combination. Yes, it didn't fit. You didn't think it would fit a Hogan kind of thing. But
it was like a Hogan's best hits. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
Right down to the tag team double big boot, like him and Big Boss Man at SummerSlam 90.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I agree with that. So it was a fun match. They get the win. I don't know what they would have done, what they did from here. I thought that this was a one-shot thing for Hogan, and he was gone. I didn't think he was going to stick around. I know he was there a couple years earlier, but I think this was a little different. The rosters were a little beefier. At least on Raw. I didn't think he was going to stick around on Raw, or I definitely thought he wouldn't go to SmackDown. So I thought this was just a one-shot thing, and that was it. So, but he gets the win. He and Shawn Michaels, the dream team,
mm-hmm.
better than Valentine Beefcake, defeating Daivari and Hassan. Great promo. Great promo here.
Yeah, it's okay. This promo here. So Christian and Tomko come out, and Christian states his place as the main event talent and raps. He takes digs at Batista, Triple H, Flair, JBL, and Cena. I thought it was funny stuff. I thought it was a nice shine for Christian. If he can't be in a match, let him do something like this. And, reminded me of Jericho. Was it 02, Backlash 02, when he did the same kind of thing?
Jericho, yeah. It was after he lost to, Triple and then he interfered in the main event. Yep.
Yeah, so I kind of, harkened back to that a bit, and the rap was pretty funny. Got some good digs on like flares and Triple H's noses and everything else. So I liked it. It was good building for Christian from a character point of view.
Yeah.
And he's an interesting guy that we'll track, because he's, since he cut his hair and got a little bit more serious, he had the stuff with Trish. Like, he's been, he's right on the cusp. So we'll see if they finally start to push him, because his pops, as we'll kind of talk about, were starting to get like really, really big at this point. He was starting to get really over.
Yes. And having Tomko, having a little muscle, didn't hurt either.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool too,
and they had good chemistry with the, Tomko with the kind of playing along with the raps now and everything. So it was good. They were friends and muscle, so it worked well. He wasn't like berating him as muscle,
Right, exactly. He was like legitimately. He did the bald head thing, the bald head crack, which is pretty good. But yeah, no, it was good to have him on. Good fill, just like Jericho. 3 years earlier, fit perfectly. So now we've reached our main event.
Time to play the game. In all my life, I pray for someone like you. It's amazing how you knock me off my feet. What? I want to know what turns you on. Candlelight and soul forever. A dream of you and me together. Because tonight is the night. when two become one. But my friend's back and you're gonna be in trouble. Hey la, hey la, my boyfriend's back. Doo 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 doo. You'll always be a part of me. I'm part of you indefinitely. Boy, don't you know you can't escape me? Oh, darling, because you'll always be my baby. Something in the way your love me won't let me be. I don't want to be your prisoner, so baby, won't you set me free? Borderline. Feels like I'm gonna lose my mind. You just keep on pushing my love over that borderline. I wonder if she can tell I'm hard right now. Baby, when we're grinding, I get so excited. Oh, how I like it. I try, but I can't fight it. Oh, you're dancing real close, 'cause it's real, real slow. You know that you're making it hard for me. If you like it, then you should have put a ring on it. If you like it, then you should have put a ring on it. Don't be mad, 'cause you see that he won it. If you like it, then you should have put a ring on it. Will you be my wifey? Yes, I'll be your wifey. Oh, say you'll be my wifey, girl. Yeah, 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 yeah. Love. Love will keep us together. Think of me, babe, whenever some sweet-talking guy comes along singing his song. Don't mess around, you gotta be strong. 'Cause stop, 'cause I really love ya. Stop, 'cause I'll be thinking of ya. Look in my heart and let love keep us together. Where, oh, where could my baby be? The Lord took her away from me. She's gone to heaven, so I've gotta be good, so I can see my baby when I leave this world. Give me the last ride. We're out on a date in my daddy's car.
I heard that Spice Girls song this week, and it was ranked fairly high this week in 1997.
Yes, I did catch that. That countdown played later in the day when you mentioned it too. Is playing the Vince version supposed to make it more pleasurable for Brad so he doesn't realize it's taking longer?
I had to expose the secrets a bit that it was pre-recorded. He didn't want me to hurt my voice. Brad, you know, it's just being the same one, buddy.
All right. World Heavyweight Championship right now. The big rematch.
The night after WrestleMania, Triple H came out sporting sunglasses and bandages, but no belt, saying Batista was good for one night, but he is great every night, and he will be the world title because be the world champion because the title gravitates to greatness. The rematch is rock solid and will happen at Backlash later in the night. Batista defeated Randy Orton, and afterwards Triple H came to the ramp and the two had a stare down on 4/11. Triple H came down to run Batista down again and said Batista fears one thing: the pedigree, because the pedigree is the truth, and of course he never hit it at WrestleMania. Down comes Hurricane and Rosie to cut him off, and they have a handicap match, which Triple H wins. Later in the show, Triple H tried to ambush Batista during an interview, but couldn't hit the pedigree. Before the show, Triple H challenged Jim Ross to a match next week from Madison Square Garden. At 4:18 Raw from the Garden, JR upset Triple H with help from Batista in one of the loudest moments in MSG history. And finally, at 4:25, Batista came out to celebrate JR's victory with the England crowd, but as usual, Triple H came out to draw with him. In the main event that night, Batista defeats Christian, but Triple H comes out post-match and hits a pedigree on Batista, standing over him as the show ends 6 days before their match. So, I mean, I'm fine. I think it's a natural rematch. I'm going to give Triple H the contracted title shot back after he lost it. I liked the pedigree stuff because he never hit it at Mania, and it kind of gave them an out to have something to build around here because Batista beat Hunter, but he never survived the hold. Did you think it was kind of dumb, though, they had him hit it on Raw?
Well, I think what they wanted to do was going into that Triple H could win it with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. I think that's why they did that.
Fair enough. Yeah. The truth name was stupid, and Lawler tries to push it a bunch of times here.
I thought they were going to make a t-shirt, which of course I would have bought. It said the pedigree is the truth. Of course I would have bought it, but they never did it.
I don't know. It's ripping off Paul Pierce. Was he already the truth at that point? I don't even know. When did he get that nickname?
2005? Was he even in the league? No, I know he was in the league.
He came in 2001.
Did he? Wow.
Yeah, he was there for the 0-2 run. Remember they kind of sucked?
Oh, that's right. When the Nets came back, when they were down like 30. That's right. Yeah, I think he was the truth. He might have been the truth in college, to be honest with you.
He's always the truth.
He was drafted in 98.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense.
98 draft, 10th overall.
I think he was already the truth in college.
Yeah, it's possible.
So,
let's see if this says it. His nickname, The Truth, was given to him by Shaq.
Okay.
After 112-107 Lakers victory over the Celtics on March 13th, 01, Pierce scored 42 points on 13 of 19 shooting. O'Neal pulled the Boston reporter over and over and gestured towards the notepad, take this down. My name is Shaquille O'Neal, and Paul Pierce is the motherfucking truth. Quote me on that, and don't take nothing out. I knew he could play. I didn't know he could play like this. Paul Pierce is the truth. So there you go.
Okay.
So he already was the truth. Batista adapting to being the man still. Flair comes out first, kind of looks concerned, and he introduces Hunter. Batista's fired up. I thought he had a great look as champ. Hunter plays some mind games with Batista being afraid of the pedigree. Flair distracts Batista, and that allows Hunter to attack to start. Hunter goes for the pedigree right away, but Batista slips free. Hunter tries it again, but Batista shoves him off and then teases the Batista bomb. And Batista's confidence is tremendous. It just like oozes it. It's amazing how that light switch just went off in the fall.
Yep.
Because he always looks so, I'll say tentative or hesitant, but now it's just like everything's just so natural for him. Batista continues to use his power, blocks another pedigree with a backdrop to the floor. That's where the tide turns as Hunter sends Batista to the barricade with a spine buster and then shoves him over the railing into the crowd. And then it's a suplex on the floor. Hunter targets the lower back in the ring. Much crisper pacing than Mania, I will say that. Batista can't get the bomb. Batista bomb due to the back. Flair lays into Batista on the floor. Batista survives a spine buster, and Hunter starts to get a little flustered. Batista quickly turns the tide and uses his power to run through Hunter, whipping him hard into the stairs on the floor. And the crowd started to seem to be backing Hunter during Batista's Hulk up. They were booing a bit. Flair ties up the ref. Hunter uses the belt to block a Batista bomb for a close near fall. Batista blocks another pedigree, but wipes out the ref by accident, and then Hunter hits it, but there's no ref to count. And I thought that was a shitty way to play off the angle. Batista should have just kicked out right away. Like, you finally have him hit it, and then you give Hunter the visual pin with the ref down. It's like the whole story was Batista could kick out of the pedigree, and then you know, I don't know, it's stupid. Batista blocks another pedigree, and Flair pitches the ref back in, can't count, so the ref bump completely killed the flow of what had been a pretty good match, I thought. Batista blocks another pedigree. It's a spine buster for a near fall. Batista blocks another pedigree, lands a huge rattling clothesline in the corner. Hunter kicks the new ref in the nuts. Flair comes in, but he gets wiped out. Batista blocks another pedigree with a slingshot. Hunter goes low and bounces Batista in the corner. Batista stumbles into a Batista bomb for the win. I thought this was a really good match and story with a nice finish. I enjoyed it overall. Two things bothered me. The pedigree that Batista should have just kicked out of immediately if you really want to put this over, and the ref bump I thought completely killed the flow. Like, they had a really nice flow going, and that just made things kind of awkward. But that said, I thought it was better than Mania because it was tighter, not as long of a heat segment, and the crowd was weird. The first time that I feel like Batista hasn't really been backed in a while. So what did you think of the match, and what do you think of those few things? Do you think those hurt the match, and what did you think of the crowd?
I like the match because it was compact. I felt like the match, as much as I did like the match at WrestleMania, I felt like this match had a flowed a little tighter. The pedigree thing was stupid, and the reason I say that is because the feud from here has nothing to do with it anymore.
Right.
So why make that linger?
Yep. Exactly.
That was stupid. I agree with that 100%. And I thought the match was the pacing was great. I loved Batista's alternate blue tights. I don't think he'd ever worn blue before, really. The ref bump was dumb. The crowd, I didn't know what to make of the crowd because, I mean, the crowd booed Shelton earlier for no reason. So
but at least he was in there with Jericho. I mean, when the hell was the last time Triple H got cheered? It was weird.
2003, Scott Steiner, probably.
Yeah, I don't know. It was odd.
Yeah, no, it was odd. But I think the long drawn out, like the last like 4 or 5 minutes of this match were kind of took a lot of starch out of the match that it could have that could have made this match even better. The last few minutes.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. No, the last 5 minutes. Yeah, no, the beginning was fine. I thought the first, like, the length of the match, what we got? 16, 22? Yeah, I would say the first, like, 12 minutes were really good.
From the ref bump till the end is what the weak spot was. It hampered the flow, and I hated the pedigree. I'm with you. Like, if the pedigree's not going to continue on, why do you have Hunter basically beat him with it? You know, he didn't survive it. The whole point was that he was supposed to kick out of it and, you know, stay alive. And we didn't even get a near fall off of it.
I mean, I understand that they were maybe looking for a third match, but you can come up with a third match some other way.
Yeah, but this GM, just have him give him the friggin' match.
Yeah, or he just comes at like, well, when we get down, you know, when we get down the line to that moment, Triple H's a heel. He just does something bad guy-ish. I mean, you know.
I'm curious to watch that build again as part of the package for that show, because maybe he did play in. Maybe he does say I had a beat. I don't remember as of now, but we'll see. So maybe we should reserve a little bit of judgment, you know, to see if that played into it at all. But
right. The end where he shoves Flair. I did like that. I did like that part of the storyline that he's frustrated that, you know, I can't beat this guy. I got my rematch. What do I do now? So I did like that part, but the not kicking out of the pedigree was stupid because it's not going to be part of anything from here on out. And I thought the first 12 minutes of this match were really good. And like the last 4.5 minutes kind of slogged a bit. As for the booing of Bidai, I have no idea. No idea. I have no answer for that. It's just nothing to explain. Because you're right, Triple H has been just a great heel in that aspect. And, you know, then there's the typical internet booing. But I don't see it. I don't get it. Particularly the end. I'm sure that moment probably pissed a lot of people, a lot of the haters right off. You know? So, I don't know.
And then, again, I liked the match. And you know, had some good spots. The Mania had some good spots. Like, I didn't mind the Mania match, but this definitely took that and tightened it up. Eliminated the kind of the fluff, the heat segment shorter. Mm-hmm. And I thought they showed some nice chemistry in this match. And overall, I guess we can talk about the whole show now. Surprisingly good. Like, I the memories I had of this 05 stretch here, like right after Mania, reminded me in my head of more like 04, you know, kind of mm-hmm. blah shows or whatever. But when I look at it, you know, I looked at it and watched it here. I was actually surprised. I thought the crowd was really good. I thought everyone worked pretty hard. You know, the tag match was probably the only real down point. I mean, I even liked Kane and Viscera for the work they did. So I wouldn't even say that was a big down point. So, I mean, the opener was very good. Edge and Benoit was really good. Hogan stuff was fun and the main event was good. So it's really hard to, you know, dump on this as a show. I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too. The crowd was weird, but even weird is better than nothing. You know, most of the matches were good. I liked the opener. I liked the main event. I liked the Hogan Shawn tag was entertaining. Cool to see a neat moment like Rosie and Hurricane.
I mean, I really remembered the show as being like awful in my mind. Like, oh, what a boring show. It ended up being really enjoyable to watch. So it's, I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe. I would say match of the night.
Time has done well for it.
Probably
Edge Benoit.
Edge Benoit, yeah.
But, I mean, I think there's three legit contenders. I mean, Shelton, Jericho, and the main were both really good, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So there you go. There is Backlash 2005. Batista firmly fortified as the World Heavyweight Champion. And what does the future hold for Triple H? Because at least in 2004... he had the whole Eugene thing as a backdrop. What do we do now? Do we really have another? I mean, the next Raw specific pay-per-view is until the end of June. So they've got some time to do something. So as we have a SmackDown pay-per-view in May, and then, something else happens in June that we'll get to.
All right, so that'll do it for us here. Backlash 05 in the books, another episode in the books. So this week coming up, very busy mm-hmm. week. We have Dangerous Alliance coming Wednesday night. Got some fun October-themed games for you, from what I hear from Mr. McGinn, who spins the bucket up and picks those for us each and every week. We have a new Sports Evolution. We have mm-hmm. some other all our usual shows on both feeds, the PWO, PTBN, and the Place to Be podcast feed as well. So, Scott, we'll be back in 2 weeks with our Halloween Spooktacular, fifth annual Halloween episode.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
Number five.
Crazy.
So that'll be 2 weeks from tonight, and then a month from tonight, we'll be back with Judgment Day 05, as we head into a pretty fun stretch here of pay-per-views in the year 2005. So, with that said, I am JT, that is Scott. We are out. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. We'll be eating some candy. We'll be doing the pumpkin pie-eating contest, like the big, fat, sloppy pig that you are. We'll be yelling at Elizabeth, dressed in costumes. Should be a lot of fun. So, join us then. Until then, everyone take care. I'll talk to you later.
However, the Reese's peanut butter donut, a little overrated.
Gary Spivey's hair is like what's on Rotella's chest.
And back. And legs. Everywhere else but his head. Some girl I've never seen in my life that was alright, because the lady was chill. Then we dipped to the theater set to film. We saw Elm Street and man, it was death. And everything seemed alright when we left. But when I got home and laid down to sleep, that began the nightmare, but on my street. It was burning in my room like an oven. My bed soaked with sweat, and man, I was bugging. I checked the clock, it had stopped at 12:30. It had melted, it was so darn hot, and I was thirsty. I went downstairs to grab some juice or a coke. Flipped the TV off, and then I almost choked when I heard this awful voice coming from behind. It said, man, I ain't even wait to see who it was. Broke outside in my drawers and screamed so long, cuz got halfway up the block, I calmed down and stopped screaming. Then thought, oh, I get it, I must be dreaming. I strolled back home with a grin on my grill. I figured since this is a dream, I might as well get ill. I walked in the house, the big bad Fresh Prince, but Freddy killed all that noise real quick. He grabbed me by my neck and said, here's what we'll do. We got a lot of work here, me and you. The souls of your friends, you and I will claim. I said, yo, Fred, I think you got me all wrong. I ain't partners with nobody with nails that long. Look, I'll be honest, man, this team won't work. The girls won't be on you, Fred, your face is all burned. I pat him on the shoulder, said, thanks for stopping by. Then I opened up the door and said, take care, guy. He got mad, drew back his arm and slashed my shirt. I laughed at first and thought, hold up, that hurt. It wasn't a dream, man, this guy was for real. I said, Freddy, it's been an awful mistake here. No further words, and then I darted upstairs. Crashed through my door, then jumped on my bed. Boom, the covers up over my head. Said, oh, please do something with Fred. He jumped on my bed, but threw the covers with his claws. Tried to get me, but my alarm went off, and then silence. It was a whole new day, I thought. I wasn't scared of him anyway, until I noticed those rips in my sheets, and that was proof that there had been a nightmare on my street. Go to sleep, Jeff. Jeff.